I took one and like it just it felt very like ethereal and like flames and tree, like I don't know. So I just started like I made a copy of it with my little light table and I'm just like break out my colored pencils and it was like I felt like he was there with me.
Almost like guiding your hand kind of or...
Yeah, it was wild.
Welcome to Boston Blockchain, where we focus on the people and projects that are driving innovation in the industry. I'm Kyle Hedman of China Shop Productions and today's guest is Colorful Carl, founder and CEO of EpicMade. In this conversation, Carl shares his journey of building a personal brand and navigating the world of NFTs. We discuss the importance of authenticity and creativity, the intersection of art and business, and how he's preserving his father's artistic legacy through digital art. Carl and Ross over at EpicMade did the amazing cover art for us, so be sure to check out their links in the show notes. Now let's meet our guest.
All right, so let me make sure I can say your name right here. So it's Carl...
Cleanthus.
Carl Cleanthus.
There it is.
And Colorful Carl. We'll just go with Colorful Carl.
You can absolutely go with Colorful Carl. That is the entire reason I made the brand.
Right. Can you actually tell me the origin story of that name?
Yeah. So so let's take two steps back. Let's really build the origin story.
Yeah, there we go. Right? Yeah.
So I was in AIGA on the leadership committee. I was the president for my local chapter in Hampton Roads. And as such, I was going doing different events and networking with other leaders of other chapters. AIGA is a trade organization for creatives.
The Artist Guild Institute?
Well, that's something I'm a part of now. So the American Institute of Graphic Arts is okay. What the acronym used to be, but they since have dropped it. And it's just AIGA, but that's the origin of that.
Gotcha.
Anyways, talking to a guy, he's like, oh, you got to meet my friend Chris. Like, you guys have a lot in common, blah, blah, blah. So I get introduced to Chris, who is Chris Doe. I don't know if you know who Chris Doe is. I mean, wildly famous designer, owns something called The Future. But this was probably a few years before he got really famous. Had no fucking idea who this guy was, right? Like, so I double booked meetings, and I was in between driving from one place to the other, and I got my little phone set up in my dash in between my steering wheel, and I'm talking to Chris Doe, who like is too famous for me to even get a hold of now. it's just like... But we're driving and he starts to give me some great advice about how like I need to start producing content, right, for myself, because no one really wants to interact with a business like some a logo and a brand. Like they want to see the humans that run these things, right? So I was like, all right, well, I need to build a brand, right? So fast forward to 2021, I started making some content. I had my marketing director just like, dude, just come film me like doing shit in my backyard, like, because I don't know what to make content. Like, oh, I you don't even know what you know. And it needed to be inconsequential content for me so that I could get the knock the rust off of being behind the camera and just talking to people, because I love people and I love this stuff, but hadn't done it in so long.
You also got to kind of find what you want to do out of it too. So you need to have some freedom to kind of experiment and try some different things, right?
100%. And also like in that same idea, so I'm trying to build a brand that people can relate to, that's I'm this creative person, but I also have these other things and trying to be really real. Like, and that's the only thing I'm good at. I can't be fake. It just doesn't work for me. Well, yeah.
I think that's kind of especially if you want to be an online personality, that's going to be the thing that probably makes you the most more successful than anything else that you do.
100%. Yeah. People can see through bullshit real quickly. Having too much of a stale thing. We were talking the other day earlier, like, I can't find my professional hat. Like I lost it somewhere. Like, you know, it's like whatever that even means. Right.
So
the origin story, sorry, to finish that up, is we're sitting there, we're talking, and I make really colorful, crazy art, but I'm also just a colorful person, right? Like, I really hate to be bored. I hate stale things, and I can never stop moving. And I'm always cursing and saying crazy shit. So, like, my wife and my business director are like, you should be Colorful Carl. My wife's like, yeah, let's Colorful Carl. She really leaned into that. And I checked all the URLs and like it was available everywhere. So
and this was in 21?
2021. No one had colorfulcarl.com. The only mention of Colorful Carl in quotations in the entire internet was like some ceramic doll from like the 40s or something. Like, I mean, old as shit. It was like a little clown or something, right? So,
oh man, you need to license that.
I mean, so I everywhere, every platform, somebody actually has Colorful Carl on YouTube. I've been trying to reach out to them. So if they ever find, I mean, I will buy this channel from them. They haven't been on in 12 years, but they parked Colorful Carl. So I am Colorful Carl Art on YouTube.
Colorful Carl Art. And you do live streaming every Wednesday, you said?
Yeah, so every Wednesday night, 8 p.m. On Colorful Carl Art on YouTube. But if you go to colorfulcarl.com, I have links everywhere. I simulcast to TikTok, X, You know, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram. I think that's all of them.
Twitch, yeah, that's enough,
and Twitch,
right?
And Twitch.
Twitch is one I haven't messed around with too much, but I can definitely see some potential. I think that's more for a live stream, which is obviously what you're doing. Yeah. But
so, and they like flush your streams eventually, like they punt them, so they're only there for a little while. So I like kind of driving everyone to YouTube because all my lives are there for a year. But I did do most of my streaming on Twitch for probably like 6 months out of the 2.5 years I've been doing this.
Yeah.
So I'd have to download them and then upload them and do this. It was really annoying. So.
Right. Yeah. And you also host your own podcast too, the Pixel Retentive Podcast.
I do have the Pixel Retentive Podcast. I think we're on like episode 60. We started last year.
Okay.
And that's really about the intersection of art and business. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to just put things out there that like we wish we had have known. My co-host is my creative director from Epic Made.
Mm-hmm.
His name's Ross Chupa. He's been working with me since 2012. And I started this company in 2006, and you know, here we are, 2024, wow. Which is that's like an adult later. it's crazy, you know. And I've grown up with this business, right? I didn't know what the fuck I was doing in 2006. No idea. I just knew I didn't want a job. Like, I can't go punch a clock somewhere. I'm gonna die. Like a little piece of my soul every day in this little punching clock. that podcast is all about that. So it's the intersection of art and business, and we interview other agency owners, marketers, creatives. And we get their kind of unique take and piece of like ideas and their genius about their space and how they do their things in hopes that like it helps somebody else make it a little easier in their space and their journey. So.
And you're here in Boston. Like most of your focus here has been talking about the NFTs and like the intersections and use cases and the cool things that are happening in that space. One of the things that you said, you pointed out an example from CryptoMonkeys and how they were able to generate, I think you said it was $100,000 in revenue in their first year, and they never actually sold a single asset.
Yes.
How in the hell did that work? And
sure.
Can you explain to me how this royalty systems work?
Absolutely. So Soggy Apple Pie, shout out, makes CryptoMonkeys, I think with her partner. I'm not sure the details there. Pseudonymous friend of mine. I do not know her name.
Right, right.
Like, she goes by Soggy. Okay. And she's a wonderful person. I was just chatting with her the other day. I've met her in person. Still don't know her name. So that's the space though,
yeah,
right? Like
yeah.
People are very comfortable building the persona and putting themselves out there how they want to be perceived. And like, you don't need to know my government name. Like, you know,
right.
And like, she doesn't, you know, she isn't like that, but she's just like, I'm Soggy. Like that's her thing. So anyways, but so CryptoMonkeys, she built a community on Discord. I'm sure they have some other channels as well. And actually she just sent me a message this morning. So, I asked her for an update on her project.
Oh yeah.
But long story short, to answer your question, they built a community up, around some other things they were doing. She is a designer and an illustrator and created these CryptoMonkey assets and has just been making them for years now. And people win them in the community through some sort of interaction or some sort of thing they do, and they get awarded CryptoMonkeys to their wallet, and it's built on the Wax blockchain. There's like almost no gas fees. It's the same blockchain that like Upper Deck's on and like all these trading card companies where they're putting all Garbage Pail Kids launch some NFTs on there as well.
Okay.
But royalties are built into these natively. So the smart contract says the minting wallet gets X% of every transaction of this NFT in perpetuity. Right.
Wow.
So that's in the immutable record, right? So if let's say Soggy gave me a CryptoMonkey, which she did. And let's say like this CryptoMonkey has some cool trait and somebody else wants it, right? Like any collectible, right? Mm-hmm. So thinking about in our life, like I like to paint this picture for people. If you walked around your house right now, there's any number of little things and knickknacks and sentimental bullshit all over your house that only has value to you guys because you ascribe that value to it, right?
Right.
It's collectible for you because your friend gave it to you or it has this thing or you like gnomes or you're into chickens or whatever your shit is, right? Like,
yeah.
So that's how this works in the digital space too, right? So people have these digital lives and personas. And you know their wallet and their assets are a flex or a statement about who they are and what they believe and what
right.
they're into. So long story short, she just keeps creating CryptoMonkeys, like new ones. And I don't know what her process is, if she has like an algorithmic generator, which like you build a profile that's like, hey, it has this face, this fur, these eyes, these things. And then, you know, there's 15 eye characteristics that are red, green, yellow, blue, purple,
right.
or 20 furs. And then it randomly picks those. Or if she's individually drawing them, I haven't asked her.
So that's kind of like how they do in like Zed Run, like how you can breed your NFTs together to create new ones. Like those are like traits then.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Right. So And they all have traits and stuff like that as well. So anyway, she gives them all away. And as people decide they like this one or that one, they trade them on the blockchain. And if there's any transaction, like I'm going to buy yours and I'm going to pay $5 worth of it. We'll just keep it in USD terms so it's easy to translate. But it'll be like X whatever Wix or Wax. Then when that transaction goes and authenticates on the blockchain, in the smart contract, it says that there's royalties, which basically just slices off whatever that percentage is and it goes back to the creator wallet. The creator wallet is here, you know, that's the originator, and that's in the record of the blockchain. Yep, yep. That's where this NFT asset started. And then when it moves to here, you know, she gave it away. So zero fees, $0, zero transaction. She just, it's like an airdrop.
Yeah, yeah.
And then from there, it's every time it moves, you get a percentage. So even from the next wallet, it still comes back to the original wallet. So
why
does that make sense?
Yeah, but why hasn't the gaming industry got involved in this? Because that's one of the things that they have always been upset about in the secondary market. They get nothing for the reselling of games. But now most games are all digitally owned at this point. So,
They will.
Yes.
it totally makes sense, right? Because I hate that I buy a game now and I'm going, okay, well, I could buy the physical one and then I can give that to my buddy when I beat it.
Yes.
Right? But in this digital space, it's just here and it's sitting here doing nothing for me.
Yeah.
Right? So in the world that we're moving into, I can sell that to my buddy. I can loan it to him, just transfer it to him, to his wallet, if you will. And, you know, there can be a secondary transaction or it can be free or whatever that case may be. And I think that will happen. I think, I was just talking about this a little bit in my chat as well, but the problem now is these huge companies can't take the risk of not having clear regulatory guidelines around NFTs, around Bitcoins, around what's a security, what's not a security, when are we, like all this stuff, because it's in some regards a financial asset, and then sometimes it's just a video game thing, right? Like, so we're merging these technologies and, you know, some of our government regulators who have been there for 50 something years, you know, they're still trying to understand Web 2. And so Web 3 is like way beyond. And then when we get into AI, they're just like, time to retire.
Pretty generous. Some of them are still trying to figure out Excel.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They just delegate anything that has to do with a screen to somebody else. So that's the problem, right? You have a giant companies that are doing successful things, right? Think about like Epic Games. I keep talking about them, but they make Fortnite, right? I've never seen a better licensing deal type of company. They've got licensing with every brand on the planet. If you're doing something awesome and you need your stuff out there, you're going to set up something with Fortnite and they're going to put some skins in there for your movie characters or whatever. There's almost no, other than maybe Lego, I've not seen any environment where you have DC characters right next to Marvel characters, right next to like all these universes coexisting in one metaverse or ecosystem. Right. It's crazy powerful. Now, if those were NFTs, you know, a kid playing Fortnite for the past 10 years could be collecting rare skins and then sell that, you know, whenever, because there's only, you know, however many people quit the game or they forget they have or they lose their account. Like, you have all these assets that are in your account that you could be trading or selling on a marketplace, which that has like infinite upside value, right? Not only are you getting more investment from your player, right? But on the flip side of that, like, the community gets stronger and the gaming platform itself can have whatever royalties they want.
Right.
If they want to discourage that kind of thing, they could take a 90% royalty, meaning you only get 10% of your sale and they take 90% of the cut. You can program whatever you want into the smart contract, especially if you're doing it in your own ecosystem.
Right.
And they don't necessarily need NFTs to do that if they wanted to house it all in-house and do their own, like, you know, if they did it all on V-Bucks or something. Mm-hmm. But again, I think the big problem is, like, why would they do that and risk their business when they have no idea what the guidelines are? And it, like, they start moving millions of dollars in all these people's hands. And next thing you know, like, well, those are employees. Like, what? What are you talking about? Like, I mean, who knows where that could go, right? It could get crazy and they can't take those kind of risks. That's my objective opinion.
That makes a lot of sense. But there also needs to be a good fit too. Like, one of the things you mentioned in your panel today was that when you're talking about NFTs and the future of gaming, is that they're mostly NFT projects that have a game kind of slapped together to go with it.
Right.
We need a good game that has the NFT stuff added to it, not the other way around.
Right.
And you mentioned Pokemon Go being one to take advantage of that. I want somebody to reach out to Magic the Gathering because that seems like the perfect match for this type of environment.
Without a doubt. I've been playing Magic my whole life.
Like, I just started getting back into it again recently.
Me too, with my kid. I bought the Magic like Game Night Starter Pack. It has five balanced decks.
Yeah.
You know, one red, one green, one black, one blue, one white. And like, they're very well balanced, and like, you don't have to build a deck. You don't have to get crazy. Yeah. I don't need to spend thousands of dollars, like $50. And like, whenever my like cousins come over and stuff, we all just say, you want the red deck? I'll take the blue one. Boom, boom, boom. Right. We can play Magic. And like, it's really great. So it's been nice to get back to that, because I didn't play for 20 years. Right,
right.
I actually traded my whole childhood collection to my mechanic as a kid. I was at college in Norfolk, and it flooded out while I was in class, and my car died. Like, flooded the whole inside and ruined all my shit. My mechanic was a huge Magic the Gathering fan, right?
Yeah.
So what I ended up doing was giving him all my cards to fix my car, because I needed it in college, because I was a broke art school student. Right. Like, I was like, I can't get to school anymore. So anyways, that's just a fun side
note. I lost all mine. I don't know what happened to all my cards. When I was, I think my brother got them.
Yeah, I'm trying to get my brother's cards. Yeah. Like, nah, bro. Like, but I think to your point, once Pokemon pulls this off,
yes,
right, and I don't know if Pokemon's going to bring that to the United States until the regulations are clear here, but
right.
In other countries it is clear. So you have a giant multinational corporation. They could launch it in specific regions, right? So right. I don't know if they're going to do Pokemon Go yet, but they're going to do they're starting with their trading card game, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which every time you buy a pack of Pokemon cards, it comes with a scannable barcode. What I'm imagining is, your cards are now going to come with an NFT parallel asset,
right,
which they're already doing. The whole system set up, it's a digital game now that doesn't have NFTs. But I think they're just trying to give you that backside value,
right,
of like, okay, these assets are now tradable just like your cards. So now you're getting, they're already doing all of the work.
Mm-hmm.
They already had the physical representation with the digital representation. It's sort of a no-brainer for them to go, okay, well, now these are just NFTs.
Right, just connect the two.
Boom.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm really excited how that pans out. And then, right, how does that play into Pokemon Home, Pokemon mm-hmm. Go? Are all these Pokemon you collect everywhere NFTs now? Can you bring your trading card fucking Pikachu into, you know, the next Pokemon launch on your Switch, right? Like,
right.
That will be really cool.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can already do that with Pokemon Go. Like, I can catch Charizard down the hall here and transfer him into my Pokemon game on the Switch. And all the different versions. I do that all the time with my kid, which is fun. I've been playing Pokemon.
Blows my mind.
Since it came out, like when I was in middle school.
Right.
So, yeah.
Wow.
I saw Pokemon Red and Blue.
That was the only one I think I ever played.
Yeah,
I could play it for hours. Then there's another really cool project that you've been doing, and this is one of the things I think you live stream, but it's making NFTs out of your father's art. And I'd like to kind of just hear a little bit more about the backstory of how that came to be.
Yeah, absolutely. So, the origin of that, so my father was an amazing artist my whole life, like really inspired me to be creative and be an entrepreneur.
You're actually a third generation, you said,
third generation, right? My grandfather was an entrepreneur by necessity, right? Like, you come off the boat from Greece in the middle of the time when, like, Greeks aren't welcome.
Right.
And they're definitely not white, and they're definitely not part. I mean, the Klan literally was persecuting Greeks at this time in New York and in the area.
Yeah.
Like, there was a whole society of the Hellenistic society, how to teach Greeks how to assimilate to white culture.
Mm-hmm.
So that we would stop being murdered by the Klan.
Jesus.
So not that, I don't know, that's just not like a little off topic. But that mentality of like, okay, well, no one's going to give me opportunities, so I'm going to make my own opportunities, right? And that's
right.
Very much an immigrant mentality. And that happened to most people, and they came over in like famines. Even the Irish were treated
Italians.
Everybody, when they came over in groups because their country was going to shit, they got treated like subclass citizens. But that workhorse mentality, and that like, all right, well, I can be a victim or I can make my own opportunities. So that started with my grandfather, as far as I know. And I don't know the history beyond that because they moved over here and I don't know anything before that, right? Like, but like then my father had that same mentality, owned restaurants, owned all kinds of businesses, always trying to invent things and do stuff like that, and very much instilled that into me and my brothers. You know, we own, I think, 6 businesses between the three of us, right? So like fully unemployable at our core. Like there was no way we were ever going to do anything other than work for it. You're going to tell me what to do? I don't know.
Right, like, right.
My wife can barely do that. You know? So anyways, I tangented the shit out of that. What was
that's
I talking
all right.
about?
We were talking about your project with your father's art.
Right. All right. So me and my dad were super close, and I spent the last 3 months of his life while he was dying from cancer just taking care of him. And you know, one day we were sitting there in the room, and he was really upset that like he never got his due as an artist. Like, really a brilliant artist, has all kinds of I've broken them down into different styles, but I just promised him, I was like, look, man, I don't know what it's going to be or what it's going to take, but like, I promise you, your art will not go unseen. Like,
yeah.
I will do something amazing with this.
I just got chills.
Yeah. That's the first time I said it without crying. Anyway, so So he died in 2016. I just hoarded everything, right? Yeah. I got all of his art and like all of his little knickknacks, and like my whole house is covered. It's like a museum of my dad's art. It's on the fucking ceilings. And, like, I mean, if you check out my live stream, literally like the ceilings are covered in my dad's artwork. And so I put up about 35 or 40 of them in my house. And I don't have a big house, like, you know, 2,000 square foot, you know, like it's like, so my wife's like, all right, well, that's enough. And they're beautiful. They're colorful. They're statement pieces in every room. Like my house looks awesome. But like, you know, I have 700.
Yeah. So much wall space.
Yeah. And my buddy Chris knew this, and he's big in the Web3 space, but he's on he does a lot of work in the supply side and like ports and like shipping containers and shipping and logistics, right? Yeah. So, but he loves NFTs and understood the value of it. So he came to me, he's like, dude, let's do something with all your dad's art. I was like, yeah, what are we going to do? Like, I don't know. Like, right. It's like NFT is like, I don't know what that is. Well, let's do NFTs. Right. So, you know, I watched crypto and I watched, you know, a Bitcoin go from 2 grand to 20 grand or 30 grand at the time. And I just kind of been sitting on the sidelines watching it, trying to understand it. But then this is the first time I just jumped in. So he convinced me to start digitizing all of my dad's work. So then I hired a professional photographer and have beautiful high resolution images of every piece of his art that I have over 700 pieces. And then, so I decided to split them into collections and start figuring out, all right, well, you know, these are the faces and these are the Pollock splattery things. And these are like the abstract ethereal watercolors. And so then I started with the first collection, Faces of a Mad Artist. Mm-hmm. So I took 72 of the first of, I have about 250 of these unique, weird faces my dad makes. And I took 72 of them, symbolically died when he was 72, and I minted them to the blockchain. Mm-hmm. And in each one, I created a little story about them. So I have all kinds of traits and characteristics, like color. There's a Carl rating, like 1 to 5. Like, what do I think about this? Well, this one sucks. Like, I hate this one, right? Like, and there's only a couple like that, by the way. But they're for real, like, one out of five, right? Like,
I kind of want that one, actually.
Exactly. I also have a fine art degree, right? So I evaluated them on like color composition. My father was a color genius, like, and that's wholly where I get it from, seeing this stuff my whole life. So I took all that, minted it to a first of its kind NFT art memoir. And the idea was, I'm minting this to the blockchain. I'm pinning it on a service that I hope will be there forever. I might end up putting this into some sort of permaweb. I'm sure I will as this becomes more and more of a thing. Right now, it's just kind of like a creative experimentation for me. And in part of promoting that leading up to it, I had done a few art therapy type of pieces for myself, right? Mm-hmm. Where it was like, my dad was dead. I'm laying around stoned, crying for weeks, right? Like, I think I did nothing for like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And like a month in, I went and I found one of his like sketches. I was like, this thing's cool. Like, it kind of reminds me of like this treant thing. And I always love treants. Like, that's my jam, right? Like tree beard. So I do a bunch. If you look at any of my work, there's like every once in a while you'll see some tree monster of some sort. but I took one and like it felt very like ethereal and like flames and tree. Like, I don't know. So I just started, like, I made a copy of it with my little light table. And I'm just like, break out my color pencils. And it was like, I felt like he was there with me.
Almost like guiding your hand, kind of?
Yeah, it was wild.
Wow.
And so I'm making this art, and it just felt amazing. And like, something flipped there. It was like 3-4 months in, right?
Yeah.
And this was like 2016 still, right? So I hadn't fast forwarded to, it wasn't 2021 yet, obviously. So I hadn't done this yet, but that kind of laid the groundwork for what eventually would be me leading up to promoting this collection when I dropped it. And we dropped it during, I think it was NFT NYC 2022 or 2021. One of my buddies opened up a gallery in Hell's Kitchen called Hell's Kitchen NFT Gallery. So leading up to that, Chris was like, all right, do a live stream, because he knew I'd made a couple of these pieces already. So I'd already made 6 of them, I think, at that point. And he's like, how long does it take you to make one of those? I was like, 2-3 hours. Because I started with the colored pencil one. I was doing 10-20 hours. And then I moved myself into doing them digital, because I'm a digital artist by trade. Like, that's what I've been doing with Epic Made for years. So I took that idea and I was like, well, just do them live. I was like, okay, right? I've never done that before. So then I started like connecting dots and having people help me out. So next thing you know, I'm live streaming once a week talking about my collection's gonna drop. It's gonna drop here. We're gonna do it in New York. We're gonna do the thing. Boom, boom, boom. And it just, I fell in love with it. So every day, once a week, I would take more of these sketches from my dad, like just line art, simple sketches. And I drop them in the Photoshop and my friends show up. And shout out to Derek and Andy, have never missed a show.
Oh, you love this, super fans, right?
2.5 years.
Yeah.
Amazing. I would have quit so many times.
Right?
Like, on the way up to this.
Joel, I mean, if you're listening, thank you, buddy.
Dude, it's they're amazing, amazing friends of mine. Anyway, so they come out and they just been continuously pushing me to do this. So anyways, I take a piece and I draw live, and like I'm getting drunk and laughing and being stupid, and they're like, yeah, add an eyeball in his ear and like whatever, and like not, everything goes. If I like the idea, I'm going to roll with it. If I don't, my ass, that's, I don't know about that. So we just keep, I collaborate posthumously with my father, and he feels like he's there with me, and the whole thing's just wild. And then all my friends show up and we just make things.
And they're all part of it too.
100%. It's a community thing.
And you say that you're loading like a lot of the stuff into the metadata of the piece that you're creating. So like the live stream itself, is that like part of there so people can see who, you know, help contribute and that kind of stuff?
Absolutely. So I record the live stream. It's archived on YouTube. I also do an isolation recording that I'm stockpiling to make a bunch of content with later.
Yeah.
But yeah, when I mint the first, so I did 10 promotional pieces for that first drop, and in the metadata, I linked to the YouTube video of me creating this art. So you can literally go see how this art went from a sketch my dad did in a notebook that he forgot about in 1970, you know, 15 years before I was born. He didn't even know he would have kids, didn't even want kids then, to like, here he's been dead since 2016, and I'm bringing this stuff to life in the 2020s as a new piece of art. The whole idea of it is really cool. So yeah, that link's in the metadata of the NFT, so you can see the whole thing.
I love
that. And then when you buy the NFT, you get a one of one signed authenticated print. If it's a digital asset, like the ones I make are all digital. But like if you buy one of my dad's NFTs, like you get the piece of art. Like, I keep all the intellectual rights. You can't reproduce it and do all that sort of stuff or sell any prints right now. I might change that in the future, but for now it's like, yeah, you get the, I will mail you this beautiful piece of art. The cool thing that I've seen too is like, I found a bunch of these in my mom's shed that were, you know, thrown in there when they bought that place in like 84, right? So like, and like the roof caved in at some point. There's like mildew and creatures everywhere. And like, it was crazy. So I'm like digging through there, like excavating in this like shithole as they're like, my mom rehabbed the whole thing and all that. But like, I find like these stacks and stacks of notebooks and the amazing art in there, right? Because my dad just made art all the time. And some of them are just like mildewed and just like faded and gross looking. And that's one of the ratings too, like physical condition. Some of them are a one.
Right.
Like don't be surprised if you buy this NFT and the original comes and like you want to keep it in a Ziploc bag. Like, but on those, like I'm also remastering them as a digital professional artist, right? So I've taken those and the ones I mint to the blockchain are what I know my dad intended for this to look like.
Yeah.
Right? So I'll clean off all the mildew. I'll make the colors bright and saturated and beautiful. So it's a preservation thing as well, right? Because if I die and I never make my dad a famous artist, which may happen, right? Like I might fail building this thing, or I'm loving the journey, so I can't fail on an internal trip level. But, you know, no one might ever find value in his art, but it'll be there for 100 years.
As long as blockchain exists.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there's some magic in that. So I feel like I've fulfilled the promise.
Yes.
Right. So yeah,
that's
the long answer to what you asked. So the second time I ever did a collaborative piece with my dad, I was like 1 a.m. and like I'm up, nobody else is awake, and I'm like crying my face out doing this piece of art. It was really cool, right? So I had the face, I was drawing on top of it, and it was like it was coming together, and I was like, it felt beautiful. I felt like I could feel my dad with me, you know? And then my phone starts ringing at 1 a.m. on like a Saturday. What? And I was like, who the fuck is calling me? Like at 1 a.m, like, let me get myself together. And I was like, and it was this woman that used to date my father that I've never talked to in my life. Like we connected on Facebook and she's calling me through Facebook. And I pick up the phone and she's got this like deep Russian accent and just a beautiful Russian woman, right? That my dad used to date, you know, he was all about his beautiful women, but really loved this lady. They had a really great connection. And I'm going to do a horrible Russian accent here, so forgive me. But, she says, I pick up the phone, like, hello? And she's like, Carl, like, I'm not crazy. I was like, okay.
That's a great way to lead off.
Your father and I were very close. He's deeply spiritually connected, and I loved this man, and he loved me. And she said, I was just asleep, and your father wakes me up from the dream and tells me I have to call you right now. I was like, holy shit.
Wow.
And she says, he's so proud of you and so proud of what you're doing. And like, it was the weirdest, craziest, like most spiritual thing, right? Like, I don't know. So I love sharing that story because it's I can't even talk about it.
That blows my mind. Like, you hear some things like that, like, it really starts to make you question the world.
Dude, like, I'm not religious. Like,
I'm not either, I hear that and I wonder now.
I study them all, like, as much as I can, and I respect everyone, anything that makes somebody a better person.
Yes.
But, like, this is so profoundly outside of what was explainable and too serendipitous, right?
Yes.
It's too coincidental. Like, I'm doing this piece, crying about my father, and, like, I get a call from some woman that I've never talked to in my life to tell me that my dad's proud of me for doing this art.
That she doesn't even know I'm doing. Yes.
Because I'm doing it on my desk with a colored pencil. I'm not live streaming. I'm not.
Right.
I'm still, like mourning. Like, my dad had been dead for 6 months. And, like, it was just crazy. And it sent me on this whole, like, journey. Like the meaning of life.
Yeah.
Like, really shook me into, like, I need to do things with my life.
You need
that
to
are,
at least do more of this art. Because,
yeah, like, this, what it was right? speaking to my soul.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, I'm going to die long before I ever want to. And there's so many things I'm never going to get to. And, like, spending any time on shit that doesn't matter, is inconsequential, like, isn't something I should be doing, right? So I just really started, like, cutting out bullshit in my life, having some of these experiences after losing my father. So I just thought that was a fun story to share. It was
yeah.
so crazy and weird and, like, you know, it was cool, motivating. So.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. I know that's not an easy one to tell. But.
It's fun. It's life. It's human.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, thank you.
And, you know, incorporating, so now in my personal art journey, like, I love to take pictures and ideas and things of people that are meaningful to someone else.
Right.
And then, like, do a piece of art with them.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I love this whole idea of co-creation and collaboration, you know. I'm working with a yoga studio back where I live in Suffolk, Suffolk Hot Yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing, by the way. I go there like 6 times a week. It's just like, this is 100 degrees, and, you know, 80% humidity. Like, don't die. Like, it's, I just don't want to fall down. Like,
sounds
but I
like
feel
Houston to me.
Amazing. Like, but so what I'm doing for them is I'm taking photographs
mm-hmm.
of every one of their staff members and the owner. And then I'm bringing that into Photoshop on my live stream. And you can see some of these in the recordings that I've done just this year. I've done 5 or 6, maybe 7 of them. And turn them into a beautiful piece of art. And everything I do on the live stream, I always include one of my dad's pieces, even if it's just like a texture or some colors
yeah.
or whatever. I mean, sometimes it's like 15 things of my dad's, but the whole thing is like a tribute to keeping his creativity alive, right?
Yeah.
So my dad's involved, I'm involved, you're involved, the audience is involved. Like, it's really a co-creative thing. It's so much fun.
Such a great community too, I bet.
Yeah, we're up to like 150... We've topped out 150 like live viewers. Like,
that's pretty impressive on YouTube.
On the live, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's pretty cool. And you know, for a long time it was like Derek and Andy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like,
yeah.
They're like, Carl, what's up, dude? Like,
anybody who's tried to start something creative has spent a lot of time talking to one or two people.
Yeah.
Like, way more than you'd like to admit.
A lot of time talking to myself, right?
Yeah.
Because,
I mean,
they'll show up, but sometimes they can't make it for the whole show. They got like 5 kids and mm-hmm. businesses and all kinds of shit. They're just there to like rah rah for a little bit. I mean, sometimes they'd fall asleep with the phone there. It's great. But like, the journey is awesome. You know, I think about Gary Vee all the time. He talks about, he's like, dude, I made content for years for like 4 people.
Yeah.
Like, nobody watched anything I made.
Mm-hmm.
And I just keep thinking about, like, I'm in love with the journey.
Yes.
And like, the show I'm making, I named that For the Love of Creativity, because that's why I'm doing it, right? Like, keeping the creative alive, because I'm not on the creative team for Epic Made.
Mm-hmm.
I'm conceptual. I strategize. I'm the CEO. I do all the sales and biz dev. But like, when it comes down to getting the shit done, Ross leads that, and we have an entire creative team, right? So I don't touch it.
Right.
So I don't get to be an artist anymore.
Right. Oh, I see. Okay.
So I had,
yeah.
I was like really sad for a while.
Kind of starved for that outlet.
Right. And I hadn't made art since art school. Like, I phased out of being in the art department like 6 years ago.
Right.
And then, you know, I graduated in 2009. So there was a couple years where I was helping with like logos and stuff, but that's not scratching my real creative itch to do a logo. I love to do deeply illustrative, crazy mm-hmm. art, you know? That all like came back to life when I was honoring dad and started the live stream and started promoting them. My whole collection sold out in New York. The guy that put
That's
the gallery
awesome.
On bought the whole thing. Wouldn't let me take him home.
Right.
I was like, bro, like, well, I gotta go. He's like, ah, no. I was like, dude, well,
thank you.
Shout out to Naveen. Like, he loved him, and like, that was really cool. And then Judy also comes to my live stream all the time, as they bought shitloads of prints and mugs and hats and stuff. So it's like, It's really bubbling up, and it's fun because I'm doing it for me, and I think that's why people resonate with it, because like I love people and I love art and I love collaboration, but it's because I need to get this out and people are excited about it.
And people can feel the energy and the excitement when someone's genuinely excited about it, and it goes back to what we just said at the beginning there, right? The genuine nature.
Yeah, I can't fake it. I tried to be somebody else one time, didn't work.
And then the people at Epic Made, they're the ones doing actually our the graphics for this podcast, right?
Yeah.
So we got them to thank for that.
Absolutely, yeah. So Ross and the team there are making all that work and look beautiful. So when you see the thumbnail and all those things, yeah, we did that over here.
Anything else that you want to say before we wrap this up? Anywhere where people can go to support you that you'd like to point them towards?
Yeah, I mean, so colorfulcarl.com is my website, and you can access all my social media channels. You can get links to Epic Made, the Graphic Artist Guild, which is a community I'm a part of now. It's a nonprofit trade organization for creatives. We're out there so we literally have written the book on the pricing and ethical guidelines for graphic design and creative careers in general for like 30 years. The guild's been around since the 70s. Just all about supporting the business side of creativity.
Yeah.
And then obviously my podcast, Pixel Retentive, on the intersection of art and business. There's links to all that. And then the Crazy Carl Collective. Like if you want to hang out with the truth, like the realest people in Web3, this is my favorite community. Serendipitously named the Crazy Carl Collective. They were the Crazy Carl Collective before I showed up being Crazy Colorful Carl. But they're amazing. So many makers and builders in the space. I mean, we've got Ordinal NFTs. We've got a Genesis NFT collection. We've got a PFP collection called the Crypto Tat. The floor prices are locked in. Like, everyone in this community is a holder and a builder. We've got our own meme coin, the Baby Jesus token that we did a takeover of an old rug, and we've been building that up. And we've got some music, Crazy Carl Records, like these guys in Europe that are a part of it. So you have to buy a crypto tat and then you get to become a Carl, right? And I was already Colorful Carl, but everyone else has a pseudonym with the name Carl. Really amazing community. Do your own research, but these guys are and it's women too, obviously. These human beings are fucking amazing. I can't say enough good things about the Crazy Carl Collective.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time, man. I really enjoyed your topics today, and we're probably going to have to catch up again at some point because I think I have another half a page of notes here to actually quiz you on some stuff. So
cool.
Whenever you want to do it again, just let me know.
I love to talk, so you just tell me when to shut up.
I love to listen, so it works out. All right. Awesome. Thank you, Carl.
The cover art for this podcast was custom designed for us by the amazing people at Epic Made. Epic Made is a digital art and animation studio that actually understands the magic behind powerful creative assets for gaming, entertainment, and tech. So visit epicmade.com to get expert creative help for campaigns, commercials, socials, and more. That's epic-made.com. DSpark is the leading user research platform for Web3. Companies can easily get feedback from any type of user, helping them build better products and improve their marketing. If you're interested in giving feedback, get paid USDC to share your opinions and improve Web3. Visit DSpark.io today. That's DESPARK.io. Bola allows you to create, tokenize, and finance invoices and manage all of your on-chain accounts. With TCS Blockchain, they recently went live with their groundbreaking solution that uses blockchain to settle freight invoices 90% cheaper and faster than traditional means. Thank you for helping make this show possible, Bola. Go to bolanetwork.com and tcsblockchain.com to learn more and join the waitlist. Numbers Protocol harnesses blockchain technology to enhance authenticity and traceability of digital content globally, with operational bases in London, LA, Dubai, and Taiwan. Recognized as the best in Web3 at the 2023 SXSW Awards and supported by Google and NVIDIA, Numbers Protocol offers the Capture, an all-in-one suite for content verification, copyright protection, and monetization. This technology has proven pivotal in projects like the archival of the 2020 U.S. presidential election and supports artists and businesses in ensuring the integrity and security of digital media. Jotto is a cutting-edge platform that amplifies the customer voice by making it simple for organizations to gather feedback through video, audio, and text. Using powerful AI, Jotto analyzes this feedback in real time to deliver actionable insights that help organizations understand their audience better. Whether it's governments, businesses, or events, Jotto enables a deeper connection by ensuring every voice is heard and valued. It's an essential tool for anyone looking to turn raw feedback into strategic actions and drive meaningful engagement. So once again, thank you to our sponsors for helping make the show possible, and thank you everybody for listening. views and opinions expressed on this program are their own and do not necessarily reflect the official policies or positions of any affiliated entities. The information shared in this podcast is for general informational purposes only and should not be construed as financial, legal, or professional advice. Always conduct your own research and consult with a qualified professional before making any decisions based on the content of this podcast. We appreciate your understanding and hope you enjoy the insights and expertise shared in today's episode.